coming to you from our new home at DynastyLeagueFootball.com and a DLF family of podcasts. We are the Superflex Super Show. We talk QB values, Superflex strategies, evaluate and debate Superflex trades, plus our own twist on Superflex team management with exercises like Tinderflex, Super Six, and You Are Nuts. So when you're done with this awesome DLF podcast, find us on Twitter at Superflex Show and join us in a discussion of the fastest growing format in all of fantasy football, Superflex, on the Superflex Super Show.
Yeah. Check my inbox and what do I see? Just another day, another T-R-A-D-E. I'm an addict and I need it in my veins. I'm an addict, otherwise I feel plain now. Every day I wake up, people got a problem. Making all these trades up, got me saying got them. But I've been paid up, I even started from the bottom. See, I don't wait up, I ain't even playing possum. So what it cost, I'm just a couple of firsts. Can't believe that it worked, not to say I'm a jerk. But I'm an addict, it's what I said in the first. You can curse all you want, you can pray in your church. But I'ma keep tapping return, I win up, I learn. I ain't trying to burn any bridges, I yearn. For the feeling I earn, all my winnings to turn. You had a cheek before I drop you like the beat. I'm an addict, and I'm not really ashamed. I'm an addict, I'm reclining with the brain. I'm an addict, and the pot is what I'm playing. I'm an addict,
Russin Rocky.
Other names, Trade Addicts 5. Let's go.
I am Dynasty Outhouse, and I have a trading problem.
I am Rocky Petrella, and I also have a trading problem.
I'm Chad Parsons, and I have a big Dynasty trading problem.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to a special Wednesday session 152 of the Trade Addicts podcast, member of the DLF family of podcasts, and also a proud member of the Dynasty Addicts podcast network, the DAP network, if you will. And we will. Like I said, it is Wednesday, and it feels weird, mostly because we normally record on Mondays. But, you know, life happens, and we're here on Wednesday, and so much free agency has happened. And sadly, it's already like old news by the time we're recording now. But we're still going to talk about some of it. But before we do jump straight into that, we have a first-time guest. And when we do have first-time guests, we ask them a couple of questions. So, Chad, first and foremost, why don't you tell the crazy people that may not know who you are, what you do, and where they could find what you do?
Sure. So I've been playing Dynasty for quite a while, dating back to, I think it was 2001, 2002, joined my first league, dabbled a little bit with the internet age, you know, for with redraft as Yahoo is percolating up and that, you know, a few years before that, 98, 99. But it was about 2010, 2011, I really started getting into, it was MP3 players back then, not to date myself, but it was hard to get podcasts. You really had to work at it to actually have it mobile and going around. It wasn't cell phone enabled, I would say. And so I had a bunch of anything Dynasty I wanted to get my hands on. I loved playing the format, but I was starting to get to the point of being frustrated with what was out there. So I created my own show. They always say, be part of the solution. Don't just complain about the problem. So mm-hmm. I said, let me try my hand at this. And technology was not great back then. You had to call on your cell phone into, I remember I used Blog Talk Radio, which is still around, but the technology obviously is a lot better. It's more accessible to everybody, producers and consumers alike. But so 2011, I started my own podcast. It was live. It was exactly 30 minutes every single week, but I was getting those weekly reps. And I was also doing that as my side hustle. It's not that, you know, that was my full-time job or anything. I was in the military at that time. And so I was doing a bunch of different things, really enjoying the NFL, college, and fantasy. And it eventually, a few years later, turned into starting UTHDynasty.com as a site. I had already been dabbling as a staff writer at Football Guys. And it's just been progressive since then of the site growing. I started doing premium shows attached to UTH. Football Guys this past year actually gave the green light for Jordan McNamara and myself to start the Dynasty Show, which is the first real time that there's been any expansion beyond the core 3-4 guys that we know and love over there at Football Guys recording their shows between Cecil Lammy, Gene Brammel, Matt Waldman, and Sigmund Bloom. You know, they've been doing 98% of the shows over the course of time for like a decade. And they just celebrated, I think, show 3000, of the Audible. And I was looking back, and I think total, UTH actually, the weekly show, just celebrated show 500 last week / over the weekend. And just the value, you know, and I think everyone who podcasts for any amount of time appreciates just the longevity factor of consistently showing up, improving your craft, and refining what you do and striving to get better and showing up, you know, and being consistent and doing that for 50 episodes, 100 episodes and beyond is just a huge mark and achievement to continue going and achieving new things and working on your craft and your art form. So 500 for that. I think with all the premium shows, I'm at 2,500 or so in my quote unquote career. Yeah. So, all those things, you know, combining, it just turns into a lifestyle. I ended up leaving the military about 4 or 5 years ago and making this, just taking a leap of faith and saying, I'm going to see where this goes, you know, that I have an opportunity midlife of, you know, not breaking down my body more in the military and trying to maintain some health in that regard and see where dynasty and fantasy football takes me. And I really haven't regretted it. One day since, there's lots of challenges, obviously, to be your own boss and set your own schedule. But what I always say is if you're a self-starter and you have a lot of creativity and a lot of drive to pursue projects, you know, then it definitely can work out. And it's kind of interesting seeing how everyone, you know, working from home has been a lot more normal over the last 12 months because I've been kind of doing it for a while now. And it produces a lot of challenges, and it's interesting to see others that are now facing that and kind of working through those challenges of blending home, life, and work, and all that balance of, you know, under one roof for a lot of people having a home office or maybe even not so much. But it's just been great. And like I said, the Football Guys Dynasty show is expanding, and UTH Dynasty has been doing really well for a number of years.
Yeah, I started this show, I feel like it was probably 3 years ago. Wow. From 1 week from now, it will be 3 years from when we started. I didn't realize, wow, that's kind of feels crazy. But like, you know, back then, I mean, I was listening to podcasts before I started this. And I feel like at that time, like Under the Helmet was one of everyone's shows that they were listening to because, I mean, you were a staple. I mean, coming back in. And now I don't think people realize how many shows there are now and how few shows there used to be. So like you came into podcasting and, you know, Under the Helmet, you're just like, yeah, okay, no, this is what I listen to. These guys know what they're talking about. And if I do want to do my own show, I listen to this. And that's kind of, you know, a direction I need to take myself because clearly they're doing something right because however many years later, 500 shows. And that's pretty damn awesome.
Yeah, thanks for that. Yeah, and I think, you know, whether it's dynasty, fantasy football, or NFL, I mean, whatever these bigger genres are, the sheer volume, because now you can buy a mic, heck, you can record over your phone. I mean, the accessibility factor, you can start hosting platforms for free, you know, if you're just going to record every once in a while. So the entry level, you know, it's so easy now, where it was a lot of work back then, mostly from fingers crossed technology works for me and the quality wasn't that great, or you had to actually have a mixer at your house and do it that way, and then you're uploading files on probably this computer that was the size of a filing cabinet, you know, and all this kind of stuff. So yeah, I mean, we really are in the golden age of podcasting. And I mean, the joke goes, you know, everyone has a podcast. Hey, what's your name and what's your podcast title? Like, it's sort of like that if you were at a meet and greet or whatever. But I also think it's good, you know, because it also kind of says, where are you? You know, and what I always say is, you know, if someone just starts and they're like, hey, I just recorded my first show, you have any advice? And I'll be like, well, you got to record a lot more. Like, I don't want to, your first show is never good. Like, you're not going to like it in 3 episodes and you might not even like it now. So what do you want me to say? Like, when you start finding your voice, I mean, 3 years is way, you know, way more than finding your voice. I mean, I would say it's 20, 30 episodes, maybe 6 months if you're doing it every single week, let's say. But then it's like now you can actually see where you are. You can get a little opinion. Like a lot of people, they want clicks. They want attention. They want, they want all of this notoriety. And I know a lot of people, I saw some poll that youngsters now want to, like, one of the job, what do you want to be when you grow up? And they say YouTube star. Like, yeah, so, kid. So it's not like a fireman or a policeman or a pro athlete. I want to be a YouTube star. So I think a lot of times, you know, people write articles and it's like, oh, I want everyone to read it. I want to be published on ESPN or NFL.com or whatever. It's like, what I always say is slow down. Like, do you really want people, like, the one chance you get for people to read something or listen to something to be this? Like, you probably want more practice and more reps, you know, so that you feel like it's more indicative of talent and, you know, quality work. And it probably isn't today. And it probably isn't this thing. So I always say, be careful. Like, it's not a bad thing. I had 19 people or something, one of them being my dad, listen to my first episode. And that's fine, because you know what? It wasn't that great. And I had copious notes. And it didn't, you know, looking back, it's just a starting point. It really doesn't mean anything. The journey, it's always about the journey, right? I mean, what are we going to, quote unquote, turn pro podcasting? What does that even mean? I mean, it's really about the journey. And if you enjoy it, that's the biggest first hurdle for a lot of people. If you at least have some acumen for it and you strive to get better.
Oh yeah, for sure. And man, what does going pro mean? I don't know, but I want to do it. I mean,
YouTube star means going pro.
Oh yeah. No, absolutely. My 7-year-old, when that, you know, he had that he wanted to be a YouTuber when he grew up.
Did you tell him he can do that now, and then he can get that out of his system, and then he can do something else later?
No, because then I have to do it for him, and I don't want to do that.
That's true. And you don't want him to be able to do it himself, because that just sounds like it's rife with risk.
Oh yes, way too much. And then you know what, he'll end up being good at it, and then it's going to be a thing, and I don't want to.
And it's going to piss dad off.
How did you get more followers than I do?
He's more successful than I am, and he's 7.
Well, he's a lot cuter than I am.
Sounds like a Will Ferrell character getting upset that his son is more popular than he is at 7.
I'd watch that movie, going to be honest.
Yeah, that sounds good. It was a joke. It sounds like he's going to do the Anchorman thing. The joke. I thought you were kidding.
Okay, well, let's just jump into, I mean, is it news? Is it free? We'll call it news. It's the free agency. I'm going to read down this list, and it's a long list, and then we will go and talk about a few of them because, like I said, some of it's old news, some of it's just not important, but I wanted to say it out loud just so in case someone only listens to our show and no other fantasy football content whatsoever, I want to make sure we got you, okay?
That's most people.
So, all right. Will Fuller signed a 1-year deal with the Miami Dolphins. Cam Newton re-signed with the Patriots for a 1-year deal. They also signed Hunter Henry. Annoyingly enough, so they have Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith. Riley Reiff signed with the Bengals, which normally we don't care about offensive linemen, but after watching Joe Burrow get just destroyed, I feel like this is one of the best signings of the offseason. Rashard, the real Hollywood Higgins, re-signed to the Browns for 1 year. Juju re-signed to the Steelers for 1 year, which I think is actually pretty shocking. Philip Lindsay joins the ever-diluted backfield in Houston for 1 year. Kenyon Drake to the Raiders for like $11 million, which I just don't understand, and it kills everybody's Josh Jacobs shares, but we're going to talk about that later because we have some Josh Jacobs deals to talk about. John Brown also signs a 1-year deal with the Raiders. Jared Cook kills those Parnum shares by joining the Chargers on a 1-year deal. Kenny Golladay, 4 years, $72 million to the Giants. We're going to be talking about him. Kyle Rudolph also signs with the Giants, which I think is interesting because he got decent money. So what does that mean for Engram? I don't know. Now, here's a great one. Ryan Fitzpatrick to the Washington football team. Love that one. Also, Curtis Samuel to the Washington football team. Andy Dalton to the Bears after the Bears could not get Russell Wilson. Jameis Winston re-signs a 1-year deal to the Saints. Gronk re-signed a 1-year deal to the Bucks. AJ Green, 1-year deal to the Cardinals. Chris Carson re-signs to the Seahawks. I mean, I think he had like a 2- or 4-year deal. Gerald Everett also signed to the Seahawks. And I think just today, T.Y. Hilton signed a 1-year deal to go back, 1-year deal to go back to the Colts.
Good job getting through all that, Russ.
The dramatic reading of recent free agent signings.
That was rough. And not much of it was great to talk about.
You pronounced almost all the names correct. I'm very proud of you.
I will take almost every single time. Okay, so first things first, we have some trades and some listener questions sort of jammed into all of this. So before I ask you which you want to talk about, Kenny Galladay, at KP Poker KP, because I could say that tag correctly now, wants to know what Kenny Galladay's value is with the Giants. Is it up, down, or does it stay the same, Chad?
You mean from being unemployed? Well, deductive reasoning, it goes up because he has the opportunity to produce this year. But I think it's down. I have concern. I'm not a Daniel Jones fan. And one of my biggest concerns with Galladay is the volume going to be there? Because, you know, you've got Sterling Shepard, you've got Darius Slayton, you've got Evan Ingram. They signed Kyle Rudolph. They're having Saquon Barkley come back, who is a major target, you know, volume guy at the running back position. So all of that, and you're hinging all of this for upside from anyone notable, is going to be on Daniel Jones making a big step forward. So I have questions about all of that. And if Galladay, you know, to really get to a strong fantasy place, 125, 130 plus targets, I don't think that's possible in this offense. I think the ancillary pieces are all good enough that this is going to get spread around. And for Galladay, who I would call him at best market neutral on before, he's not in my top 30 dynasty running backs, wide receivers. And I think this is a net negative because he's old enough. The market's not coming back on him. He's going to be almost 28 when the season starts. And we know if you're not an elite producer, I mean, guys like Antonio Brown at that age or Calvin Johnson or Julio Jones, they can maintain when you get to 29, 30, but almost no one else does. And I think Galladay is going to have some cracks in his production. And that's going to lead to, I think the next 12 months, market value-wise, is going to be pretty brutal for him.
That is honestly a take haven't really heard, and B, really wasn't expecting, so I love it. Now, Rocky, how are you going to follow that up?
I actually agree with Chad, because when I saw this question, I was thinking about it. I think it's a great point about the age, too. I think there's so many podcasts now that have said Kenny Galladay is older than you think he is, that I don't think he's older than we think he is anymore.
I think now we've caught up to that.
We realize how old he is. Yeah. But he hasn't improved his situation. He was the number one receiver in Detroit. He's the number one receiver in New York with the lesser quarterback. And as Chad said, I mean, he's got Saquon, he's got Ingram, he's got Shepard. He's got Slayton. So, I mean, I don't see this being him dominating the targets either. So I don't see how you can view it as anything at best as similar. And I'm kind of with Chad. It's kind of a slight downgrade for him.
Okay.
So one thing I was going to point out, the Giants, they were sixth from the bottom in pass attempts last year. And that's without Saquon Barkley. So do you predict him to be like middle of the pack, you know, 50, 60 passes more than last year? And I think something like that, like some macro point about their passing game, and it hinges on Daniel Jones, is going to have to be the way that Galladay hangs on. Because the thing is, at his age, he's going to be minimally valued if he puts up like a wide receiver 28 or 32 type season. And I think that's fully in play for him as like a middle ground. But if that happens, he's going to fall through the floor. So just keep that in mind, that if he doesn't actually provide impact this year, and I would say that's top 15 or so, 18 maybe, that he's not moving the needle much. So just keep that in mind if you have a vice grip on him. You're like, I can't possibly sell him. Like this window from now till week one might be the best chance you have going forward.
Okay, so now I need to know. Hold on. Let's say you have Kenny Galladay on your dynasty team and you want to get rid of him.
Sure.
What's the latest pick you will take to get rid of him?
Superflex? We always have to clarify. Let's just make a call. We'll assume Superflex unless we say otherwise.
Yes.
I think with this deep class, for example, I think pivoting from him to a spot that we were just talking that Mac Jones apparently is like right now like an early second round pick in Superflex.
Yeah.
And so I would take some pick like that forward, some pick like that and in. So I would pretty much take any first for Kenny Galladay. To be fair and transparency, I own zero shares. So, and there's a reason for that because I've just kind of been below market this entire, I think I drafted him once or twice in rookie drafts long ago, but then I was able to flip him quickly once he escalated. But yeah, I think again, he's going to blend into your wide receiver core. So unless you're dying on the vine and it's like, he's one of my top one or two guys, and then you're probably not very good anyway. So I would say, where are you going if that's your environment and you're like, I have to hold him. But again, I think if you can get one of those, you know, for example, I mean, I have four four wide receivers of the rookie class ahead of Galladay in my rankings right now. So if you put those four with four or five quarterbacks, with Kyle Pitts, with two or three running backs, I mean, we're already to the end of the first round, if not early second. So that's what I would say. Are we supposed to do the show? Or are we supposed to just vamp?
I think we're supposed to vamp. He didn't say keep going. So
does he? Is this his move? Does he normally do this?
No, he does not.
Oh, okay, just checking.
Yeah. So, I don't know if he wants us to keep going or not. So I think we'll just wait and we'll edit around this.
I find what's interesting is one of the more interesting signings he left out on that list. He didn't. I was today though, so he made
a
No, Mike Davis.
I'm joking. I was
no,
joking.
I know. No. He left Mike Davis out
there.
Oh,
that's true. Yeah, I think that was yesterday, but yeah. That's true. I own him in a few places. He helped me a lot last year.
Oh, yeah. And the fact that, I mean, he could be finding another week one or early season role there. That's nice.
Yeah. I mean, I think we all think they might draft somebody, but he could certainly have a role there no matter what.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's the thing. He's at worst the number two. Like, and that's not a bad spot. Like, I think a lot of people, we were talking about this on some show last week that I really feel like that backup running backs are like one of the most exploitable parts in Dynasty still. Like, there's so many backups that people are like, if they're not Kareem Hunt or, you know, one of these five or six most interesting guys, everybody else is like, whatever. Who cares? But then if you don't get them, you have no chance at Mike Davis. The Mike Davises or James Conners, you know, of the world when they actually do hit and most of the season they're the starter.
Yeah, I mean, he could, he's already shown passing game chops last year too. So at worst, you would think he'd probably be the third down guy.
Is it weird to say that I wonder if, like, by August 1st, if Todd Gurley is still without a team? Is that weird?
No, I wouldn't be shocked at that at all.
Yeah. I mean, it felt like Atlanta was giving up on him by the week.
Exactly. They actually announced that at one point that Ito Smith was basically the lead guy. Like, they actually
won. And that's a scary thought.
Yeah.
What I wish I was above baseline on anybody in life as much as the Falcons are above baseline on Ito Smith. They love that guy.
It's true.
I don't get point either. Like, the guy's like 192 pounds and God, he can't run inside to save his life. Whatever. But you know what? If I was 190 pounds and NFL running back, I'd probably be scared to run inside too. Get blown up. I think, you know what? He mentioned he gets tired, so maybe he's off taking a nap.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know what's going on, but
he winds down.
He's asking to see if someone else in our podcast network can hop on, so I don't know if he's coming back or not.
Oh my God. Wait, how is someone going to go sit in his chair? I don't understand how you can fill in on StreamYard. How is that possible?
So
this is dicey. Do you want me to host?
We might just go with the two of us, but
exactly.
Because of that.
Come on, finish the show.
I'm going to go do that bathroom break. So can you monologue for like a minute?
Oh my God, I can do anything.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to. You could just stand there. I mean,
no, I'm not going to just stand there. I want to talk about Nerf stats with Marvin.
Okay, you go do that. I'll be right back. I'm going to take the bathroom break because if I'm it's just me and you, I don't want to do that later.
You better leave us all in. No, I'm going to drop fire. You're going to come in mid-show.
Okay.
A different show.
I'll be right back.
Man, this thing is officially off the rails, everybody. Like, this is unbelievable. So I come in. We shoot the breeze for like 40 minutes. Now here we are, host leaves, co-host now gone. All of a sudden the guest is left, as we were talking about earlier, home alone. I will say, you know, Galladay is a real risky one. And I think it just shows also the fragility of these non-alpha types. Not that he's not, there's a difference between an alpha and a wide receiver one for a given team. Galladay was that, but I would say Marvin Jones was underrated for those Lions iterations of previous years. But it just goes to show you when you're not in the strata that is an elite blue chip wide receiver. And let's not forget, Galladay was a late day two guy. He had a good but not great draft profile. But it's when you get beyond that rookie deal is when things start to go awry. Typically, the career arc is you see these wide receivers or just players in general start to peak, you know, 24, 25, 26. And yes, the good ones, I'm not going to say all timers, but when you look at who are the most productive players over any 10-year span, that's when you get the guys that end up with bigger deals and or bigger roles exiting their rookie contracts and going to their secondary career, basically, in the NFL, which would be years 5 through X. And but Galladay really isn't in that line. So what I would say is be really sensitive. And I think the big macro point of that was be sensitive to how much you pay and how much you value those types of players when they're coming into their second contract or second life in the NFL, because all of a sudden the restrictor plates are off. They are not protected and insulated by their contract and those conducive rookie deals. So just be careful. And I think Galladay is a good point of that, but there's a number of other players, and we're kind of seeing that with Juju Smith-Schuster potentially or others, that all of a sudden it's not so rosy. I know we have the falling salary cap. That's another factor there, but just an important point that, again, I think you have to be careful not to value them too much, but also see that they're peaking and the situation like Galladay may be changing. And so when you learn these lessons in advance, you can become a forward thinking and you're almost making moves preemptively for, say, next off season and thinking about that when we get up to the season and when it's week 6 and you realize somebody is producing, but yet is this the time to really max out their value and win long term dynasty wise?
Look at Chad, the pros pro there. Yeah, both hosts, Levy just keeps going. I love it. I don't know how Russ is going to edit around this, but it looks like Russ may not be coming back. So me and Chad will just go forward with the rest of the show here. Chad, I guess, which is, you know, of all these signings that we're talking about, which is the one that stuck out most to you, the biggest fantasy impact?
Sure. I always kind of look for the sneaky ones. I mean, obviously there's some bigger names here, and you know, and Chris Carson would probably be easy because he's going back to his existing team, and you know, he probably goes back to his traditional and relevant role. But the one that stuck out to me was Jared Cook, because he's been an underrated guy for years, and I really think he could get more targets with the Chargers than he got last year with the Saints. He's got a quality quarterback. Obviously, Hunter Henry is not there, but Jared Cook is still one of the more athletic tight ends. He's, I think, 33, 34, 35 years old, but he's still got plenty of juice to stretch the seam, quality offense. And so he's one that I think he's bargain basement. I mean, I don't even think you have to give a late second for him. I wouldn't be surprised in a rookie draft. You get to the third round somewhere, and if Jared Cook is someone's tight end 3, you just go snipe him, you know. And that's why if I don't have a stud at tight end, you know, I'm looking bargain basement. You know, like I was the guy that had Dalton Schultz, you know, like week one waivers last year, because I'm just always kind of looking, and most of the teams in your league aren't looking. So I always look at things like that. And Jared Cook has perennially been that guy over the last few years where it's like not valued that highly. You can trade back in your rookie draft and get him. But I think he's going to be in that top 12, top 15 zone. And right now you can get him for a throw in your deals.
Yeah, I definitely think you can get him for a third, like you were saying. Especially a lot of people were on that. I guess you're not on that Parham bandwagon.
How can you be? I mean, the guy was playing in spring football last year, and I know he got a shot, and he made a few plays in season. But the odds that they actually get all the way home in the offseason to week one starter is really low. And he almost made it. I will say he made it through all the notable tight ends, and then he had Jared Cook to overcome, and he couldn't do it that last night. It reminds me of who was it? There was a running back that almost made it all the way to week one, and then they signed somebody at the last second. But that's what this feels like, that you almost defeat the entire field. But again, Parham, the odds of him actually being the week one starter, if you rewind the tape to January 1, it's probably like 5 to 10%. If you're being realistic, they're going to do something, and it doesn't mean he can't be the starter if there's an injury. But again, Parham's a nice story, but the unfortunate thing is in fantasy, it just doesn't work out very much.
Right, agreed. And kind of, we'll get to some of these other bigger ones too, but I joked about it earlier in going with your under the radar thing. I kind of think indirectly this Joe Flacco signing actually is important for fantasy, because I think it signals that Jalen Hurts is definitely the starter for this year. He got $3.5 million guaranteed. You don't make that guy the third string inactive. You don't make Jalen Hurts the third string inactive, and you don't make the number 6 pick third string inactive. So I think they're definitely passing on quarterback. I think people can feel more confident if you're doing a startup now that you at least have him for this year. I have my concerns going forward. I am an Eagles fan, if you didn't see. And I think if he doesn't ball out, they definitely could be looking that way next year. But I think it's definitely Hurts, riding with Hurts this year. What do you think on that?
Don't you think that they're missing a massive opportunity, though? Like, so I'm not disagreeing that obviously signing Flacco does elicit, you know, confidence that they wouldn't use that first pick on a quarterback. But kind of the theory that they use with the Falcons, you know, as another example, or the Eagles would apply, or, you know, a couple of these other teams, is you don't get that high in the draft very often. And you don't get high in a draft that actually has 3, 4, 5 quarterbacks worthy of going up there. So it's a really interesting dynamic of saying, well, even if we have confidence, like I was a fan, what was it last year that I said, and this was before Dwayne Haskins completely fell off the rails, but I was big that Washington should have been drafting Tua at 102, instead of Chase Young, because I said, unless you unequivocally have the quarterback, keep drafting him. Highly, who cares? Because if you're right on all of them, that's not a problem. You'll be the best quarterback depth chart in the entire NFL history. What's wrong with that? I think you'll manage to figure that thing out. But so I'm not a Hurts fan in terms of developing as a passer. I think fantasy he'll be fine, you know, because right. He's going to run a ton. But that's different than being a franchise quarterback, being a guy for the next 2-3 years at least, and beyond that. But I just, for the Eagles, I swear, if they don't see, here's the thing that gets me. I'm a Jalen Reagor fan, so you can talk me off that ledge, like right now. But I feel like he didn't get a shot. I feel like everything was wrong in the Eagles offense. And so Jalen Hurts is not going to fix anything, in my opinion. Will they win a few more games because he runs around? Probably. But I just don't think that's the answer of anything. So if it's not quarterback, are they going to draft wide receiver there? Because that's a lot of the mocks. It's quarterback or wide receiver. And
I'm also seeing some Pitts too.
Okay. Yeah, and so, but Ertz is still there. Goddard's there. Like, are they, and I know they're trying
Ertz
to trade
is all
Ertz.
But gone. Yeah, yeah. I think he gets cut. Even if
they're going to cut him. Okay.
I mean, right. Yeah, I think they're trying to trade him, but I don't think there's any way he's here next year. So I think the Pitts thing may be sort of a smokescreen kind of thing. Maybe somebody who wants Pitts, they're trying to intimate that, you know, they might take him, something like that. But, in regards to the quarterback thing, I mean, I hear what you're saying. And I think the best point you made there too is that next year is not going to be as good as this year, probably, in terms of quarterbacks. The way I've been thinking about it as an Eagles fan is that if Hurts is not good, then they'll probably will be in this range next year. It's just a matter of whether the quarterback class is as good as not as good or not. But the roster is not good.
then why they sign Flacco? If it really hinges on Hurts, and if Hurts falls through the floor, and by the end of the year it's like, oh, you know, what are we going to do with this guy? Or he's a backup, and we know that. What's the point of week 9 or week 11 throwing in Joe Flacco? What's the point of that? Is what I would say.
I just think. I don't know what the point of Flacco is, but I think they just wanted someone non-threatening. I don't think Flacco is a guy you have to worry about taking over the job.
True.
So I think they figure, and also Flacco's not very good. It's fine. I listened to a couple Eagles podcasts, and one of the guys on one of them was saying that whatever backup they sign should be somebody bad, because if Hurts isn't the guy, or if Hurts gets hurt, you don't want to win this year anyway. So
good point.
Maybe that's what they're thinking. I don't know.
Ding, ding, ding.
So I think that might be what it is. Like I said, non-threatening. You don't want a guy who's going to come in and bail the season out for you probably anyway this year. I think they realize they're not winning anything this year. So even in this crappy division. So
can I ask you one question since I have you on Eagles radio? Miles Sanders is a really interesting case for me. Because when you look at what he's done so far in his career, and then how Dynasty values him with like a lot of insulation, and it's like, it seems like every year we've given him a pass. And I'll just tell you, like watching the games and just watching Miles Sanders, I like him. So I'll just say that right out. Now that you can like somebody and think they're a good player, and that can be different than, well, how much do you think they're going to produce fantasy wise? And it seems interesting. It's kind of late in the game for him to, he's valued way above what he's ever done in the NFL. And at 24 years old, this feels like a critical year that if he doesn't do it, and by it means like way better than what he's done any season so far, then he's going to fall off. this coming off season easily, or in season if he's not really stepping up. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm totally with you on that. Exactly what you said. I think he's a great NFL player. Maybe not great, but he's a very good NFL player. And I just worry about the usage. I don't think they're going to be a good team. That doesn't help. I don't see Hurts passing a ton to the running backs. You know, mobile quarterbacks often are not dumping off to running backs. They're just taking off with the ball. And a bad offense is going to lead to less touchdown opportunities. I don't see as much upside as I think a lot of the fantasy community is seeing. And not to mention, I even get into the fact that Sirianni comes from the Reich tree, who comes from the Peterson tree. So we don't know how he's going to use his running backs, but if it's anything like Doug Peterson, that's not great. So, I'm with you. I like Sanders as a player, but I just think for fantasy, he's probably, especially this year in particular, I don't see him being higher than an RB2, maybe in that 12 to 15 range is his ceiling. And that might be optimistic.
And that's where he's priced. That's the funny thing is, like, that's sort of where he's valued by the consensus.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I have him closer to 20, and obviously it falls off about 18, 20, 22 definitely at that point. But it's like you have the younger guys that have either have the promise of they haven't disappointed you yet at 22, 23 mm-hmm. years old. They have the promise of doing a lot more, like Cam Akers or whatever. And then, but you also got the mid-career guys, 24 through 26, that have done a lot more than him. You know, so it's like, well, if you're looking in a couple year window, there's a bunch of guys older that you would take over Sanders. And then you've got guys that are a couple years younger that are either they've done more already, or they're likely to do more, or they're age insulated, all those factors. And it just puts Sanders is one of those 3 to 5 running backs that are like the toughest for me to rank because I like him. But yet you have to kind of divide that with, well, what does that actually mean?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And if they were a good team, I'd like them even more. But it's just, yeah, I don't see it happening either. So I guess we should probably talk about a couple more of these free agent signings before we go on to the trades and listener questions. One of the ones that's most interesting for me is the whole quarterback thing in New Orleans. I'm a big Jameis guy. I don't think Taysom, I mean, Jameis has his interception problems, but I don't think Taysom Hill can be an NFL quarterback for 16 games. What are your thoughts on that situation, how it's going to shake out, and are you buying either guy?
Yeah, my fear is, well, I was holding firm even in some start ones, you know, where you'd be like, I don't really need to hold a second quarterback in this case, but Winston is a special case that because I thought he would get another job. Obviously, the prospect of being the Saints starter was appealing. But Taysom Hill there is really a buzzkill because I have this feeling that they're going to mix him in a little more than when they mixed him in with Drew Brees. And the other fear is mixing him in near the end zone, in the red zone, like these optimal settings that if you're talking about taking away, say, even 3, 5, 6 short range passing touchdowns for Jameis Winston away from him inside the 5-yard line, and they turn into Taysom Hill option plays or just straight runs and wildcats and keepers and all this stuff, that's a big fantasy deal. So while I like Winston and I think Sean Payton's going to rein him in a little bit, it's hard to, you know, say that he's going to throw 30 interceptions and keep the job or be on that pace this year. So I like the idea of Winston being the starter, but I think you have to view him as almost 80% of a starter or something like that in terms of the snaps he's going to actually receive. So that's going to be the struggle for me is I think maybe his ceiling is like mid-ish quarterback one. And I think that gets into, you know, a decent number two quarterback, a committee sort of situation in a one quarterback format. Super flex, obviously that has value. But let's keep in mind, Winston's coming back, but it's not on a big deal. It's not on like a 3-year deal. You're our guy, 3 years, $62 million, 40-something guarantee. Like, it's not that type of a deal. So this is really on addition. Let's not pretend like Winston is going to start 16 games barring health, because I don't think that's the case. They may go back and forth here. So Winston doesn't have that insulation. But I do think, again, sort of finishing in that QB 7 to 15 range is certainly possible for Winston. I would just kind of hedge on the latter side of that. And there's risk that Taysom Hill is used more.
I agree. And I mean, I think that is reflected in his price. I've done a couple startups and he's generally going in the 20-ish area. So, even since the news, I'm in one now where he just went pretty late. I think it was QB 21 or something like that. So, but yeah, I mean, there's a lot of upside there. I mean, if you can get him at that price, I think that, I mean, would you give up what's the highest draft pick you'd give up for him to go with what Russ was saying earlier? Like, would you give up a 112, 111, or would you?
No, I don't think you can do that because I think if you can reset the clock and get QB4, QB5 of this year's class that has, you know, top half round one pedigree, I think you have to do that even if you like Winston because he's at a crossroads. He was at a crossroads last year, but he's still there. Now he may work his way like Ryan Tannehill into a new deal, you know, and all of a sudden in 2022, we feel like he's a franchise guy again. He's on a 3-year deal with the Saints or somebody else or whatever. But I'm not generally one that like, give me a pick. And like, if I were moving to Winston, my typical trade move is moving down from someone that has more perceived. Like, I would rather do a deal that's like, well, I'll move Daniel Jones for Jameis Winston plus. Like that's sort of like give me a pick on top of that or a pick upgrade tier jump, but I don't view either of those guys as like more insulated than the other. Like I know a lot of people probably think Daniel Jones is going to be, you know, a franchise guy and a starter and oh, it starts this year. That's great. But he's not on that track is what I'll say. Like he has not done it. He is not insulated. He is not a stabilized franchise guy. And so Winston's sort of on the same platform. This year really, really matters to both of their outlooks. So if I can get an extra pick on the Winston side, like a second to first upgrade or just moving, you know, up, you know, into the first round from the second this year, I usually pivot from above to get additional pieces and not like, oh, I'll give you 201 for Jameis Winston. That's usually not my move.
Right. Yeah. And I agree. We just tend on this show, we just tend to talk in their draft pick nice, but that is a great, that's certainly what I like to do, with quarterbacks in general is just trade down from one guy to another and pick up something extra. But I think that's, and I like what you said about Jones too. I definitely think that, I mean, he could be not starting beyond 2021, I think. So, if this goes bad, especially after they gave him Galladay and everyone's coming back supposedly healthy, we'll see. But let's go to one more free agent thing, and then we'll get into trades and listener questions because we actually do have a lot of them, and we're pretty far into this already. So another one I was looking at on the list Russ put here. Well, let me go to two of them. I love the Fitzpatrick signing. What are you on board with everybody else? This is wheels up for Terry McLaurin. We're going to see his ceiling, or are you not as high on Fitz and the Washington offense, or at least for McLaurin?
It's almost like one of those movie scenes where they go yes, yes, no, yes, yes, no, like to all your questions. I love watching Fitzpatrick play. I think that's pretty much a universal opinion. I do worry about the when is he going to turn back into a pumpkin factor. Or is he just turning the corner? You know, are we seeing a better, more refined, aged, like a fine wine, you know, Fitzpatrick NFL quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, I do think in Miami last year, we didn't really see that pumpkin. They just, the Miami made him a pumpkin basically because they wanted to start doing it.
Yeah, and I really think Washington is conducive. You know, the defense is solid. I think they're going to stick with the run game. They've got a really nice system and scheme that's going to make things defined. We saw Alex Smith be competent, you know, what a great story, but he was really limited in sort of what he could offer. And yet he performed well. We saw Heinicke a little, you know, and so I think he's going to offer a pretty big upgrade. Now the Terry McLaurin part, here's what I would say. And my biggest takeaway, and this kind of goes with the Curtis Samuel signing there, factor that we've seen a couple different things. First of all, they haven't brought in a tight end. They probably had opportunities. They may have had discussions about it, but they like Logan Thomas. Could he be a homeless version of Darren Waller, you know, of sort of a positional convert later in his 20s, playing some career ball? And I mean, at this point, there's really no tight end to come in and challenge Logan Thomas. So I think they have plans for Logan Thomas, who saw over 100 targets last year. What I would say, though, and I watch this team every week, is their wide receiver 2+ situation last year was horrific. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like Cam Sims partway through the season was a revelation. Like he's not, let's be fair, what he is in the NFL. And it's not something that should be ever called a revelation, but they had nothing. They had Isaiah Wright. Antonio Gandy-Golden didn't work out. They had a couple other injuries, but no one notable. Steven Sims, they had big plans for him with a lot of the local talk. And so with Curtis Samuel, he's going to walk in and see at least 80 targets, in my opinion. And when you say Cam Sims saw 48 last year, where are those targets coming from? I don't think it's coming from the running backs. They had like 150 targets between McKissick and Gibson. So those aren't going away. Logan Thomas, I don't think, is dropping down to 60. So I think McLaurin's going to drop down. And it doesn't mean he's not a good player. He might still be as fantasy productive, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him drop down by 15, 20, 25 targets. He might be better, again, on a per-target basis. But Curtis Samuel is going to have a meaningful role and really help out wide receiver too. And they may not be done. They might draft somebody that actually produces, unlike Kelvin Harmon, Antonio Gandy-Golden. They've taken some shots on guys. But I think that Curtis Samuel signing, the biggest loser in terms of targets is going to be Terry McLaurin. So he might very well be as productive, but I'm not one that's going to predict he's going to break through this ceiling and all of a sudden become wide receiver 7 in fantasy. Like, I just don't think he's going to get the targets to get all the way home there.
Yeah, and something you kind of alluded to at the end there, I can see what you're saying about the targets. I would think that maybe the efficiency, you know, that improves, or the improvement of the offense with Fitzpatrick, with Samuel, you're getting more first downs, you're getting potentially more touchdowns. So that maybe makes up for it, but I can see what you're saying, that maybe it doesn't, he doesn't shoot through the roof that we're all hoping for now that he has, quote unquote, the best quarterback he's ever played with.
Let's still, again, there's a non-zero chance, and there's probably a 15, 20, 30% chance that Fitzpatrick flames out or fizzles at some point. You know, he, for two straight games, he throws 3-4 interceptions. It's Heinicke time, you know, or like, so let's not assume that this is just going to be a 16-week run and they're actually going to be a playoff team and the defense is great. And Fitzpatrick is the reason their offense is playing better. So there's a lot of assumptions in there. And McLaurin, I think, let's be honest, I think he's more of a wide receiver 2 in NFL terms than an alpha receiver. So those are all my concerns. I like the trajectory he's on. I like him as a player. But again, I think he's going to be in that middle zone of fantasy starterhood.
Okay, and the one last one I was thinking of from Russ's very long list is Gerald Everett to the Seahawks. Gerald Everett's another guy I've liked for a little while. We knew his free agency was coming up this year. I think a lot of people forget that, that 2 years ago when Higbee had that big end of the season, Everett was kind of having a, maybe not big, but a little bit of a bust out earlier in the season. He was producing. And then he got hurt and then Higbee came on. He's fairly athletic guy. Seattle has used tight ends fairly well in the past. He's obviously never going to be that kind of top three guy, but in tight end premium, I think he could get into that tight end one range, be a useful piece if you're going to, you know, fade those top 3, 4, 5 guys. Thoughts on Gerald Everett?
Yeah, we talked about Jared Cook, and I think Gerald Everett's another example of taking a shot on a guy that isn't expensive, because Will Dissly, he didn't look the same. I know he had 2 straight years, I think 3 years ago and 2 years ago, where he started out hot and then he got hurt. Significant injuries. He didn't look the same. And I think Will Dissly, I know they have plans for him. They'd like for him to be sort of on that trajectory he was as a rookie and second year player. But for Dissly, he looks like he's an average athlete or mover at best, but also it looks like he's eroding quickly. And when you have that pattern of injuries, especially lower body, it has a toll and it makes average athletes lumbering. And I think that's where we are. And if you take Dissly as not a significant factor on that depth chart, Gerald Everett, I mean, to me, is clearly the best option there. Colby Parkinson, he's just, again, just a guy. And so I just think that Gerald Everett, he's going to have massive opportunities when you think not a big wide receiver 3 presence on this offense. Let's assume Russell Wilson's going to be there. And you got Gerald Everett, who can extend plays. He's a move tight end, but a glorified, you know, big wide receiver, let's call him. So I was really high on Gerald Everett coming out. I still am. I thought, you know, Higbee developing was a negative there. I don't know if the targets are going to be robust with Lockett and Metcalf, but this is, again, I mean, you get a chip in a chair with starting caliber and possible ends. Everett's one of my favorites. So I just feel like no one's really talking about this landing spot. because there's, a clarified wide receiver one and two there, and it's a pecking order thing. I get all, Russell Wilson, whatever. I get all this stuff, but Everett can play, and I really feel like he didn't get his fair shake with the Rams.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with everything you said. Like I said, he's definitely cheap. I think he's not much higher than that Jared Cook range you were referring to earlier. I still don't think
maybe not higher. Maybe not higher. Yeah. I mean, he might be cheaper.
I just think maybe because he's younger, he might be able to get a little more for Everett than Cook. But yeah, he's right in that range. So both great guys to take a flyer on. So we will move on because we're getting pretty far. I don't know actually how long we're into this because I don't know how much we're going to edit out. But I guess we'll do the listener questions. We only have a couple of them. We have a bunch of trades we'll finish up with. So at Noob Engineer asks, there is much hype building for 2023 rookies already. I'm not a Debbie guy, and I'm only a three-year vet in Dynasty. How often does that pan out in your experience? How often does the hype draft class disappoint compared to the hype? Should I be buying now as well? Before you answer, I will just say I've only really been playing Dynasty since 2015 or so. The only class I can remember, and I have heard some of this 2023 stuff already, but the only class I can really remember hearing 2 years ahead of time like this is 2020, which obviously did work out pretty well. You know, we love a ton of guys from last year's draft. So I would say that one did pan out, but what are your thoughts on this? You've been playing a lot longer than I have. Have you seen another class like 2020 or 2023 where it has worked or hasn't worked? What do you think, Chad?
Well, I think a couple points come to mind. This is a perfect question for me. I actually have a projection model. So I back to 2000 for all the skill positions. I have my own projection model and grading system, and it's, you know, predictive and retested and all this stuff on an annual basis. And so I get to look at how things move over time, where they're a freshman. Okay. Now they're 2 years in, 3 years in. Here they are. They're getting ready for the NFL. And so I get to see their scores move and oscillate. And I think that generally classes are defined to a large degree by the running backs. So you referenced 2020. Obviously, we had, you know, in non-superflex, we had five running backs basically go 1 through 5 off the board in mini rookie drafts. Why? They were all, you know, good on their own merits, and warranting of going in that stratosphere. And I look at, you know, Bijan Robinson is one of the big names for 2023. Of those, you know, freshmen from last year, you got Tank Bigsby. You've got a few others like Kendall Milton, et cetera, that haven't really done it, but they obviously have the profile to be highly valued if they start having a strong year. I don't think it's on par with the 2017, 18, 20 classes at running back. And I really think running back drives because they're the ones that go highly. It's a more projectable, less risky position going from Devy to rookie drafts to the NFL and the first couple years of their NFL career. So wide receivers are nice, but running backs pay the bills. And quarterbacks are risky too. So putting them up there and assuming that it's a great class because of quarterbacks, that's really risky. And Devy quarterback is like going barefoot, you know, over an ice pond. I mean, good luck staying on your feet. So I don't really, looking out to 2023, the thing I would say, the biggest point is acquire future rookie picks. And even if they aren't first rounders, what I always say is if they're second rounders that your league throws away or gives away cheaply, get the seconds. If they give away thirds, take the thirds. And you can trade up later. But I don't do this whole like, oh, well, I'm going to say no to 2022 picks so that I can, I prefer that first in 2023. I'll pass on the 22 first. There's a time value aspect too. So I don't do this like, oh, well, I don't think this is as strong of a class. So I'm going to say no to that pick, but give me the next one. That's sort of when you get much closer, you start making trades or considerations like that. And we're still too far out to again, eschew 21 or 22 picks for 23 because it's going to be great. It's a long time to get there, and you draft a rookie in 23, it might be 24 or 25 before that player is actually helping you. So just be careful about going too far out and making assumptions like that. So freshmen have one story. Marcus Lattimore was one of the best freshman running back in in the last like 10 years of college football. He started after his freshman year. He had a couple of injuries. He ends up going you know, a day three of the NFL draft, had another injury or something and really became nothing. That's just one story. But a freshman has at least 2 seasons or 2 years to go before they can even join the draft class for the NFL. So just be careful about that time aspect, and risk comes along with additional time, even if a class does look good.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, and you can tell you've been at this podcasting game a while, because you're answering some of the questions before I was going to ask that 22-23 question. Even if the classes aren't supposed to be as good, I'd always rather have the sooner one because of the time value aspect. So I'm glad you brought that up.
And you can trade, right? I mean, if you have 112 this year and you hate it, you hate the pick, you hate the players available, you can easily trade that for a first next year. And deductive reasoning, it's probably going to be higher than 112. So if it turns out to be 106 next year and you don't like that one, you can trade 106 for something the following. So you can keep doing that, but at least you can make that decision then, and you don't have to trade 112 for a 2023 first today.
And yeah, or you could even turn them into a player if you're contending now. So I definitely agree with that. So we'll get to the last this listener question here, and then go through some of these trades. Luis at Bueno Fantasy, thoughts on landing spots and how much the dynasty community should or should not overreact to them. And then he says, I'm assuming he's talking about this upcoming rookie class, maybe some RBs/ wide receivers who are fool's gold and landing spot dependent to fade, and others who are solid no matter where they land to target. I'll definitely let you take that second part, because I'm no rookie expert. I listen to a lot of smart people in the writing and podcasting community kind of put my rankings together. So what do you think on both things there, the just landing spot and how much we value that in general, and then the specific question on certain players?
All right. My macro answer here on landing spots is I'm watching the draft more. I mean, we do live shows, you know, during Thursday and Friday nights. And those are for subscribers. And I would say, yes, of course, everyone talks about the landing spot, the fit, you know, the surrounding talent, all of those things, the, you know, wide receiver connection to quarterback. These things are, I'm not going to say they're insignificant, but I'm mainly watching the draft for the number. And what I mean by the number is, where did they go? Like, instead of, like, if you told me right now, like Back to the Future having the almanac, if you told me all the teams for the rookies land, you know, so and so went to Atlanta, so and so went to the Eagles, if you either give me that list or you give me the, well, so Rashad Bateman went 22 and Rondell Moore went 37, and like, if you give me, I would rather have the number than the team.
Yeah, because people don't realize that draft capital is definitely one of the most predictive things in terms of.
But people watch and they're following the uniforms, right? They're following the colors, and I think that largely is a distraction, and so, but that's the main thing, is that so round one is important. Yeah, I mean, you like to be, you probably have preferences on, you know, I will say running back landing spot, but I say it still comes down to the player, right? You can hand somebody. I remember, what was it, Daniel Thomas with the, he lands with. He goes really high. He was on pretty much anybody's radar during the draft process. He goes to the, I think it was round two years ago, to the Dolphins, wide open landing spot. He goes there, and guess what? He's not that good. So you can't really keep the job if you're not that good. So it ultimately comes down to the player. Situation changes. The player, the talent, the work ethic, you know, and becoming the best you can be and good at your craft at the NFL level, that carries over. Yes, a player can be ruined or held back by their situation, but again, it comes down to the player. You can hand somebody a job. It doesn't mean they're going to keep it, and it doesn't mean that they're going to thrive with it. Or, you know, a running back that sort of is just there, yeah, they might be running back 22 or 26 or 19, but it doesn't mean they're any good. Like, if you just get sheer volume and usage, that's going to equal something. It's more 1-to-1 in running back land. But so I would say is, you know, it comes down to the players. Like, for like the players you believe in, like, you would like them to go as high as possible. And if that means they don't go to maybe the best, whatever you deem the best landing spot. And the other part is they change. So if they go to a situation without a good quarterback, what's probably going to happen? You talked about it minutes ago with the Eagles, right? If Jalen Hurts isn't good, how long are they going to stick with the not good quarterback? 1 year, maybe part of a year. So not long is the answer. That wide receiver, whoever goes there, is still going to be on the rookie deal for like 2, 3, 4 more years. So don't worry about situation too much, because guess what? You go somewhere, like, for example, let's say this. If you're a wide receiver and you go to Minnesota, you could be like, oh, well, they're screwed. I mean, they're behind Justin Jefferson. They're behind Adam Thielen. Well, Thielen's like 30. I mean, he might be on a 1 year window. So you could be the number two, you know, if like Calvin Ridley, when he went to Atlanta, right? I mean, he's good. So therefore Julio Jones being there didn't matter a ton, right? They both can have theirs, like when Roddy was with Julio. So it comes down to the player, and they find their own usage is my general theory, with rare exceptions, obviously.
I totally agree with that. I wish I could disagree with you more, Chad, but debate is good.
Did we
for
just
podcasting.
Become best friends?
I know. But yeah, debate's good for podcasting. But I've said that a couple of times this off season, this non-point scoring season, that that I think that's Russ's term. I have to use it. I can't say good. Off season.
It's pretty roster season.
Yeah, exactly. He loves the pretty rosters, but that I almost think and. We're both, you know, you're definitely right that draft capital is one of the most important factors. But I often think that if we just went by our pre-draft rankings, you might be better off than because everybody, even probably me and you, everybody adjusts for landing spot, even though we know we probably shouldn't adjust too much. But I mean, that's what, you know, how you get AJ Brown going at the end of the first round. I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire on the opposite end sort of showed that, not that he's bad, but that we all kind of, I think, had him in the 4 or 5 range, and that's probably where he should have been all along. RB 4 or 5 range is what I'm saying. Because everybody elevated him up after Damian Williams opted out, and he went to the Chiefs, and he's going to be great. And right now he's probably valued as the RB 5 of that class. So I almost think we're better off just almost ignoring landing spots and at most adding some draft capital, maneuvering in there when to your rankings, but ignoring the teams almost entirely, because like you said, situations changed. AJ Brown had Marcus Mariota. Everybody hated that. And that lasted what? 7 games.
Right. And one quick point, just to put a parallel to veterans. And now that we're in free agency season, you know, the month of March, that it's amazing. Like generally, my values have been relatively close to what they were, like, because I do a lot of historical looks, career arcs, probability spectrums. And so coming out of December into January for the offseason, I just look at, you know, the career arcs they are in, probabilities of, you know, being top 12 in the future for a season or top 24, all these different things. And that all goes together into player value. And what's interesting is, so when someone actually lands, like, so you go into this and it's like, so Kenny Galladay, you think, okay, he's going to be one of the top 2, 3 wide receivers in terms of his appeal, or someone drafting him probably to be the number one. But all this is, it's kind of interesting, because all that is in a way baked into, well, how far into his career is he? You're comparing him kind of to guys at that career crossroads of after their rookie contract is up, as a lot of his peer group. So all this is kind of factored in. And so I haven't done a lot of major moves, right? We had questions about Juju Smith-Schuster coming out of the past couple of years. He was in a funk, you know, after 2 really historic strong years. So it's interesting that generally in NFL free agency, I'm like, a guy's going to come out of it and generally be neutral or maybe a little lower, like having that skeptical of like, you know, he didn't land that a wide receiver one job, you know, and the probabilities, or he didn't land with a quality quarterback. And I think rookies need to kind of be the same way, like you were saying, is pre-draft, here's where they are. It's about tweaks. It's about probably moving within tiers. It's not moving a guy from 5 to 2 or, I meant 10 to 2 or take moving them from 30 to 7. Like that's right. Not. Because otherwise, I do agree. Like, I've actually heard from some people, it's like, oh, I don't even do rankings until after the NFL draft. Well, doesn't that automatically mean you're going to overrank, you know, overvalue a situation because you haven't even dug in? Like, oh, I've never even watched Michael Carter play. But if you wait and he lands like 58 overall to like Miami, you're like, oh, well, he must be really good. And then you don't watch him or actually scout him enough as a player to know, you just know, well, he went to Miami. That's a good landing spot, right? So I must have him in the top 7. Well, you know, you might have had him at 25 April 15th. So be careful.
Yeah. Definitely. And I guess, do you have any, I don't know about the second part, does anybody who's fool's gold slash landing spot dependent to fade, or others who are solid no matter where they land to target?
I mean, that was a rookie center question?
Yes. I mean, I would guess the top, you know, Jamar Chase type guys and things like that would be obvious. So I guess maybe in the tier below that, I guess, is what he's talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's generally like an avoid or target kind of list, you know, that, you know, who do you like and who are you going to be, basically, who are you going to be skeptical of even if they land in a quote unquote good situation? Who do you like, you know, even if they get buried a little bit? I would say, just to pick a couple running backs for the question, I think, for example, I mean, not everyone is big on Travis Etienne. You know, they're kind of picking apart, oh, he's not a big interior runner. He mm-hmm. should run more physical. I mean, but again, he ran 4.41. He pretty much checked the boxes you wanted to check at in 215 pounds. Who knows if he plays at that? But I think, you know, the fact that he's probably going to go first round, early second round, and he offers a lot. And with his receiving profile as well, I mean, in my model, he has an 89% receiving score, 95% rushing score. And at 215 pounds, I'm sorry, you shouldn't be fading this. So I think Etienne, within the prism of like nobody having a running back one really, and a lot of people have Javonte Williams over him, I think that's, you know, a point that let's see how the landing spots go and how the market moves. But I'm definitely more bullish on Etienne regardless of where he lands. I'm more skeptical on Kenny Gainwell, for example. I know he weighed in better than expected, but he still is someone that's more of a receiving centric option. And he's older than, you know, even though he came out as a redshirt sophomore, he's older than most people think. He wasn't a big recruit, which recruiting actually matters for running backs. It's an inherent position. The 5-star, 4-star guys do produce better at the NFL level, and it's not quite so linear at the other skill positions and not so impactful. So he's one that I think is a little overrated, that is still, you know, on that maybe 50 to 75 or 80 overall projection for the NFL draft. I'm just not that bullish. So he's that type, almost like Clyde Edwards-Helaire, that if he lands in a quote unquote great spot, I don't know if there's a Kansas City spot that's going to move the needle that much, and Gainwell going round one per se, but Gainwell is going to be one that, just, you know, if I roll snake eyes, I'm going to have to be talking on, you know, day two of the draft about how Gainwell got one of the great landing spots that was left. And it's like, you know, you will move him up based on that a little bit, but I would definitely still be below market.
Okay. Sounds good. Like I said, I'm just going to leave that question to you, because I'm not into these guys enough yet to really know. But let's finish up with some trades here. We got a bunch on the sheet here. And just a reminder to everybody, Trade Addicts Leagues are 12-team PPR Superflex 1.75 tight end premium. All but Trade Addicts 1 have 0.05 per return yard, but I don't think that factors into any of these. So I'll go with this first one here, which was actually a trade I made, because I'm in about half of the trade. Russ is in all the Trade Addicts Leagues. I'm in about half of them. Trade Addicts won, and this happened within the last week, after maybe not quite as far along as many cases as we know now, but Deshaun Watson for Russell Wilson. This was kind of at the beginning of everything coming out.
Notate which side you were on.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I traded Wilson for Watson. Guy threw out in the chat, I'm willing to sell Watson. And I'll say what my thoughts on it, but let me hear what you think first. Yeah.
I was thinking. Yeah. So you already put the prism. It was early, you know, so obviously you probably wouldn't have to pay this today, you know, that the market is still falling. We still have some ambiguity on the degrees. I will say this, though, that with Deshaun Watson, where we sit today and sort of throughout the process with, you know, still plenty of time to go and plenty of, you know, news drops and all of that and progressions of this. But I am generally a embrace variance guy, that with players that can move the needle, Watson is absolutely that guy. I'm generally one that is more okay to take risk and not run for the hills. So that's going to be my first take. I will say this, though. I think that even at that moment, of anything, or actually, I guess even before that, we had the moment of, well, he's going to be traded. What if he holds out? We still had the what's going to happen risk for this year. I'm a big Russell Wilson fan, and I don't think Russell Wilson's old enough to really discount him super heavily based on age. That's one thing, especially for quarterbacks. I think people gravitate a little too much to this guy's 25 and this guy's 32. Let me value the 25 guy like way above the 32 guy, as if like 2 or 3 years from now, the 32-year-old's not going to have a job and he's going to be falling off and all this stuff. So I would have taken Russell Wilson just for the fact that I think there's less of a chance Russell Wilson is moved, goes to a different situation. You know, what if he's on Houston and they, well, they have stunk, but just, and you also have this, even if there's only a 10% chance of a suspension at that point in time, that moves the needle just a little bit. So I would have been on the Wilson side, on this one.
Yeah. I'll just let you know what I was thinking was basically that it was an upgrade. Like you, I'm much more willing to take this kind of risk. I was the guy that was buying Tyreek, but you know, back when all that stuff happened. And I mean, unless, again, this could be, it's gotten worse since I made this trade. I feel much more skeptical about how much he's going to play this season and all that. I think I made this about 7-8 days ago. And
did you offer it straight up?
Yes.
Okay, so you offered this straight up and it was accepted. That's the mechanics? Okay. See, it's so rare. I will point this out. Like, this trade is very rare because it's hard to make a straight up same position one-to-one deal.
And it's because of the whole situation, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he threw it out in the chat. I said, okay, let me, the way I looked at it, it's a free upgrade eventually to Deshaun Watson, unless you think he's going to jail for multiple years or going to be suspended for the entire year, which I don't think is going to happen.
Well, you can't really judge the trade, right? Like, so let's say he's suspended for 8 games, or let's say he misses this whole year. He's working a bunch of stuff out. Let's say the legal ramifications are being worked through, and he's on the, you know, what is it, the exemption list. And so let's assume all of that. But at some point, what you're saying is he's going to get back to playing football in Houston or somewhere else. He's traded at that point. So basically what you're saying is the moment he gets back and he's playing football, this is a win for you. And
exactly.
even if you take a knock for now, like, you may really, you know, you might be a contender where you're like, oh, but now, like, if I had Wilson, you know, or Watson playing right now, I'd be 1 or 2 games better. Maybe instead of missing the playoffs, I would have made it. But that's a short-term thing, right? That's a 2021-centric thing, or something that it might be a shame at week 6 where you're like, oh, man, like, I would have won that week if I had a better quarterback or had one of these guys. So, what you're saying is that in 2022 or whatever, that there will be a point where Watson's 26, 27 years old, let's say, and Russell Wilson's 33, 34, and you're like, I'm really glad I made this trade.
There, that's exactly what I was thinking, and I'm definitely kind of an impatient guy. I often don't think that long term, and I also, and
this trade will make you think that way.
I know, but and when I made it, I thought that, you know, it was still iffy whether he even gets suspended. And if he does, I thought he'd be back this season. I do think there's a chance he misses the entire season now, either
the whole prism is possible. Like, to think that any of us really know. So a short suspension, a whole year, he's working it out. But like, I'm kind of like you, that eventually he's going to be playing football. And then what is this? And so don't judge the trade. And that's the other thing. Like, I have a trading database where I track all my trades and look at them and regrade them for a year or two. And it's amazing how they change. Like, 6 months later, it might be a huge win. It might turn to a marginal win. It might turn to a slight loss. Then it reverts back around. So the timing of when you grade a trade, right now we're saying, that doesn't look great. Week 4, that might not look great. December, that might not look great. But next June, next October, it may look really good.
Yeah, and this team is also an orphan I took over. It's not a bad orphan, but I don't know that it's a definite title contender either. So I'm fine if this costs me, you know, potential playoff spot this year.
Well, quote-unquote costs you this year, meaning, what if you weren't even going to make the playoffs, and now this is the difference between you getting 102 and 105?
There you go.
That's a free – that's an unscheduled part of the trade-off, right?
I mean, and the other part of it, too, is you don't probably know this about me, but I am a guy who generally tends to wait on quarterback and superflex or trade down from elite guys like Watson. So the fact that I could upgrade from Wilson to Watson and at least eventually then sell Watson – for Russell Wilson or someone below that plus, it was a big thing to me too.
What do you think if you were offering this today? How do you think you would shift it? What would you ask for in addition to Watson to sell Wilson?
Gosh,
what could you leverage in the market? You think you go second to first?
Yeah, I think you could do that. I was originally going to say adding something in the early second value range, so either a player or that pick. So, but that, I mean, I think that would be equivalent to what you just said. If I was trying to go second to first or something, I definitely think though I could have gotten more if I had done it now instead of, you know, last Monday or whatever it was.
Early second, maybe a wide receiver two type. Yep. Or yeah. So, but that's, again, like you said, you didn't know that ball was going to roll downhill, and you're still saying you like the trade. Like, you're going to,
oh yeah,
12-18 months from now, you're still going to like it. And heck, you might get to be, I mean, you might really like it if you get all the way, if we get to July and it's like, oh, you know, he's going to be suspended 8 games. And that's, you know, he has a lot of stuff on the civil side he's doing, but the 8 games is really the action part of what you're going to lose. You know, he's still going to be a factor for you this year, probably. So
exactly.
It's the ambiguity that people, it really kind of freaks people out. The whole, like, he may never play again being a percentage chance. Yeah.
Yeah. And this next trade, I'm going to go, we have another Deshaun Watson trade on here, and I can't remember exactly when the allegations came out, so I would assume, because all of these are from the last 8 or 9 days, so I would assume they were still starting at that point, but I'm not sure exactly where in the process this one was because I wasn't involved. But Deshaun Watson and 411 for Aaron Rodgers, LaVisca Chenault, 22 first and 22 second. At least as of today, that seems like a fantastic return to me.
Yeah, that's a haul. And I would say here's the big part of it for me. So Aaron Rodgers is an all-timer. And like you mentioned, you're kind of like a later quarterback guy in Superflex. I'm a veteran seeker. So I was the guy that 2 or 3 years ago when Drew Brees was getting heavily discounted in Superflex, I was buying. Like, I bought Tom Brady last year because I was like, every year he plays, it's like just printing money. So if he plays one more year, you know, buying Brees last year, you got a whole year out of him. But for Aaron Rodgers, he's not done. He's an all-timer. So to write him off, and like, he was going like round 5 of Superflex startups last summer. And it was just like collecting more shares. So here's the thing I love about this deal. You have so many ways to win it. And this is independent of Deshaun Watson coming back, being Deshaun Watson, you know, producer, because Aaron Rodgers can equal or surpass Deshaun Watson's production over the next, what, couple years, two, mm-hmm. 3 years, probably, if you look at it in aggregate. So if you are pacing Watson with Rodgers, and by the way, Rodgers is playing, and we think that Watson will miss some cross section of this year, let's say. So you've got LaVisca Chenault as an extra. You can, I'm not a huge Chenault fan, but you can trade him for a first, probably. Then you got a 22 first. So even if Rodgers only plays 2 or 3 years, let's say, and let's say he only has one more great year, you still have the 22 first. You still have a 22 second. You have so many ways to win this deal. And what if things do go sideways for Deshaun Watson? I mean, then you win it triple landslide. But like, even if Rodgers retires in a couple of years, you have the first round pick. Chenault is worth a first. I mean, this is the perfect trade construction.
Yeah, I think this is easy. I'm looking at this as you're talking, and if nothing was going on with Deshaun Watson, I still like this trade for the Rodgers side. You're getting Rodgers a first, Chenault, like you said, who's probably a late first value, and a second. So, I mean, the last two are 22, not 21, but that's a lot to give. I mean, that's what I like to do. That's what I was telling you before. When I trade down from a quarterback, I don't mind taking on the age, just like you said, and getting that much on top of Rodgers when you could get just as much production. I love it.
And a key point is, you, when you get future picks and not, you know, and not like, oh, I got a 22 third and a 23 fourth. Like, he got a first and a second next year, where, again, if things go sideways, if Aaron Rodgers has a career threatening injury, you still have those picks to fall back on. The best player in this whole deal could still be that 22 first. It could still be whoever you take with that pick. So just keep that in mind. I call it a two-way go, because in this situation, you have multiple ways to win the deal. Deshaun Watson coming back, being great, and the other side not killing you because there's 3 or 4 ways to do it, that's the only way the Watson side wins.
Right. And I want to get to another one here because it's very interesting. We also have two trades involving this guy. But one of them, I believe it's from TA9, is Josh Jacobs for Devontae Parker and 2023 firsts. And I will say this trade was actually made literally, because I'm in that league, like an hour and a half before Kenyon Drake was signed. So I guess your thoughts on at that moment, what your thoughts would be, and if it changes anything now.
Yeah, I go both ways on Josh Jacobs. The historical part of me really likes him. You talk about a guy that's been basically, I think, top 15, two straight seasons, first round pedigree to start his career. Now, the evil side, if I want to be completely negative, is I think Josh Jacobs is a plotter. I think he's not being utilized in the way that we saw him at Alabama. If you had transported yourself back to when he was carving people up as a receiver in the open field to close that championship run for Alabama, it'd be like, oh, well, he's going to catch 80, 90 passes in the NFL. I don't know if he's going to be a feature guy, you know, for 250 carries. He's been the exact opposite. And again, he plays exactly like a 4-6 guy. But he has insulation. He has two more years, but now they brought in Kenyon Drake. So I go both ways. The historical part of me thinks Jacobs has a really high floor, a mid running back one ceiling. Man, those picks are intriguing. I love collecting future firsts, but you've got, I mean, this year and next season before you even get to those picks. And going back, you know, that question about, you know, 2023, how great's it going to be? Tell me how great it's going to be. Devontae Parker doesn't move the needle for me. You got Will Fuller going in there. And Tua is still a bit of an unknown to see if he works out and is actually a facilitator of fantasy points in a meaningful way. So I think this is relatively fair, but those picks are really far out for me. So I would probably still take Jacobs. And I know not many people would give two firsts for Jacobs, so this might be a little mystical now that Drake is there. But Jacobs' profile, I'm a little more on Drake is going to produce a lot of what the ancillary running backs did last year, which I believe was like 65 targets for the other non-Jacobs guys, about 500, 600 rushing yards. And that still had Jacobs as a top 10 to 15 back. So I don't think he's going to be as affected as many people do. And again, you get two seasons of Jacobs before those picks even come due. And I'm not a Parker fan. So it's close enough. If you're rebuilding, I could see this, but it's not that Jacobs is bad for a rebuilder either.
Yeah, and it's funny because I'm on a guy, I tend to value first they're that far out, regardless of the class. But I also am more with your evil side on Jacobs, the whole plotter thing. He's not getting the passing work. And then Drake comes in. I mean, that's certainly not going to help. I think he's been largely great based on volume. So, and I get what you're saying. I've heard you talk about it on Football Guys with Jordan, the whole historical thing, the first round draft capital, all that. But just from what I'm seeing, I mean, and he's produced, but it's largely based on volume. And now he's got a guy coming in that they paid a lot of money to for a second running back. So I'm with you. I don't care that much about Parker, but this is worth it for me to cash out because of the first. And let's go on to the other Jacobs trade, which was Cam Akers and 22 second for Josh Jacobs and a 22 first.
Yeah, so Cam Akers, I was just talking about it on the Under the Helmet show this week. Man, Cam Akers, I love him. And just for transparency, he was running back two and number two on my big board going into the draft and after the draft last offseason. So I was all in. A lot of people had Akers at running back 3, 4, 5. But I had him over Edwards-Helaire, even after landing spots, after the draft. Akers is a rare player. So know that going into this. But what I'm going to say is I think the market has gotten a little too hot on Cam Akers. And a big reason for that is the prospect of what if we see late in the year Cam Akers for the whole year. And again, I'm excited. I'm excited about the Rams, Matt Stafford, reinvigorating that offense. Cam Akers, as the big foundational back and piece to that offense. Everything is aligning for a big breakout explosive season for Cam Akers. However, here's the big mark. He hasn't done it. He had a marginal rookie season, and really one that didn't meet the baseline for projecting, you know, multiple running back one seasons out of their rookie year. So just know that there's risk with Cam Akers, and right now he's being valued at a point where it's considered a certainty. Like, if he actually produced within the position with where he's being valued, I mean, he's in the top 8 to 9 dynasty running backs in a lot of rankings. And yet, again, he hasn't done anything close to that. It feels kind of Miles Sanders-like in that capacity. So just know that while the arrow is pointing up, he absolutely could be a breakout player that even me, as one of the biggest fans of Cam Akers, the player, recognizes that he's a second-year player that has only had marginal opportunities so far in a grand sense of being the lead back. So know that I'm coming from a point of I have Cam Akers was one of my top two market share exposure across all my rookie drafts. Who did I get the most? And Cam Akers was one of the top two players. And so know that that's where I'm coming from. I have sold him this offseason in a couple spots. And a big reason is because, again, he hasn't done it. I've actually been buying more shares of Daryl Henderson, who was way expensive, and now he's way cheap. And I like the way cheap guys and the expensive guys. I mean, there's a big difference between what Jonathan Taylor did last year and holding him now versus Cam Akers and what he hasn't done and he might do it in the future. So that all that being said, and we already talked about Josh Jacobs, I think I love being able to upgrade future picks. And so for Josh Jacobs, you know, that again, I think the floor is solid. Cam Akers is a hot asset. What I always say, he's the pretty girl at the dance. Everyone wants a piece. So he's the exact, you know, you were talking about pretty roster syndrome, you know, in the off season, and we're always trying to collect all these dazzling pieces. Cam Akers right now is a dazzling piece. Like when I look at, like when they're auctioning off dynasty orphans and stuff, Cam Akers or first round picks and things like this, they all look great in March and April. But who's going to pay the bills? Who's going to win you games in October? It might be Cam Akers, but the fact that we're saying it might be Cam Akers and not it is Cam Akers is a big difference. So again, I like the first that pick upgrade because you know that first rounder next year and it is super flex. And again, Josh Jacobs is undervalued right now. So I think by market, what's interesting is I think the market would say, I mean, if Cam Akers is like a second round startup pick and Josh Jacobs is like a fifth rounder, let's say, I mean, I think the value is actually on the Akers side. That being said, functionally, I mean, I think if you did this trade today, you wouldn't even have to. I'm kind of surprised the second round pick is in there, to be honest. I'm surprised it's not Jacobs first for Cam Akers. And again, I think that first could easily be the most valuable piece in the whole trade. So get more quality pieces in a trade in general. And I think Jacobs is a nice pivot here. So I like Akers, but that first round pick in Superflex is going to be pretty valuable.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I, you're making me feel real smart tonight, Chad, because you're agreeing with a lot of what I think. So I was also pretty high on Akers coming out last year, and I feel like I was higher than most, and I've totally kind of gone the reverse. I just think it's kind of insane the hype train that he's gotten, and based off basically a very small sample of games where Henderson was banged up for a lot of those games too. I'm not sure the running back rotation is definitely out of the picture, and while I do like him, we don't know what kind of volume he's going to get. So,
and the passing game work, right? He really wasn't used as a receiver. He did well when he caught the ball. But mm-hmm. My point is he going to get 50, 60 receptions? Because if he's going to be down at like, if he's going to be Josh, J.K. Dobbins like and get like 30 or 28 or something, he better score 12 touchdowns. You know, he better be healthy and a workhorse. I don't think any of those things are guaranteed.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. And even though I'm not a Jacobs fan, I'll take the first. And like you said, I think now you wouldn't even need that second. Maybe you didn't even need that second a week ago or before Drake signed with the Akers hype. But especially now, I'm in a startup, and Jacobs, I think, went in like the mid to late sixth or something like that.
Well, and one thing I would say for this, if you are shopping Cam Akers, which was part of what I was saying, is you got to know, are you buying or selling a really hot asset? Or a really depressed one. Know what you're doing, because Cam Akers is hot, red hot, white hot. So aim high. And I'm not saying this is aiming low, but aim higher. Aim high enough that you're working off a counter offer, that they're backing off what you asked for. So start high. If you're trying to buy Josh Jacobs, start low. Don't say, I'm going to buy, like, if the function of this deal was buying Josh Jacobs, don't start by saying, I'll give you Cam Akers. Like, how about you start lower than that? Like, there's other ways to get Josh Jacobs from below, let's say, you know, or moving sideways, not moving down 3-4 rounds of a startup draft if it were going today. So I the first is nice. We're saying the same things, but just in terms of going after a trade, this started from something. Either someone was selling Akers or buying Akers or selling Jacobs or buying Jacobs. So just keep that in mind, that know who is the hot guy or who's the cold guy in the market and start aggressively so.
Okay, and we'll do one more trade here, and then we'll finish up the show, which was this, I think, was also from TA9. Ryan Tannehill for Tom Brady in a 22 first. I'll give my thoughts real fast. This is exactly the kind of thing I like to do, is trade down. Tom Brady was pretty much on par last year with Ryan Tannehill's production. I think we know Brady's coming back next year. I wouldn't be shocked if we get two more years out of Brady, despite his age. I'm fine, and I'm always fine. Just take, like you said earlier, the older guys, I love getting them. I have plenty of Brady, and I unfortunately have a lot of Rivers and Breeze on some of my rosters too, now that they retired. But, Ben, guys like that, Ryan. So, you get the production drop off is not that bad, and you get a 22 first. And for all we know, that 22 first could be the quarterback you're going to get to replace Brady. So I would like the Brady side here. It's generally the kind of move I'm trying to make. Where are you at on this one, Chad?
Yeah, this is perfect. You know, we talked about it with the Deshaun Watson, Aaron Rodgers one, right? Get older, you know, and if look at worst case, if Brady erodes a little bit, he isn't as magical as he was last year, and he retires next offseason. For the record, he has more years on his contract. So he just keeps moving that line out. But if he were to retire after this year and Ryan Tannehill stays magical, he's on the second half of his career run that is much better than his Miami time, that you still have the first round pick. You still have the first round pick to even the deal or win the deal. And that's highly valuable. So especially when you get future first, but Brady, it's house money if he outscores or even is close to Tannehill this year, next year. And those are important points to make at a position. Again, it sounds like we both do the same thing, which is, what does the quarterback market look like now? Who is being undervalued? You know, last offseason, it was Aaron Rodgers, guys like Matt Stafford, for example. Now it's like Matt Ryan, Kirk Cousins. I'm in on all these guys. Brady now.
Kirk's my guy this offseason.
Exactly. So just these guys that are 32 to 37 and various levels of, you know, top 10 to 15 talents at the position. That's where I like to live.
Okay. So as Russ would say, that's the end of our show sheet. So that's the end of our show. I want to thank Chad for coming on. It's been great. You know, we've had some stuff pop up here, a little unexpected, but you're very professional about it. And it's been a great show. I've enjoyed talking to you. So Chad, why don't you just, again, just let everybody know where they can find you, what you do, and Twitter handle, all that kind of stuff.
Sure thing. So UTHDynasty.com is my home. I do 99% of the content there myself. So it really is a solo platform for premium podcasts. You get solo shows. We're talking a lot about trading this critical offseason, as well as rookie profiles, rookie strategy, startup drafts, all that good stuff. Actually did, I would shout out one series that we did back. They're 20 to 40 minute shows, did about 8 of them. And it's about macro dynasty strategies. So it has nothing to do with specific players. It's evergreen. You can listen to this next year and it applies. I thought about releasing it as like a standalone product, but it comes with a general manager subscription. So you just get that. And again, whenever I have free-formed ideas to do series like that, it's just part of the Rolodex of premium podcasts you get with a subscription. There's also a trade calculator that if you've liked a lot of the historical stuff that I've gone into, that's the process. You know, it's so many things that go into player value. And now in the trade calculator, there's 26 custom formats. There's contending, neutral, and rebuilding formats for each of those, custom built from the ground up. And those are refined and updated regularly. So that's the place to find everything that I offer, as well as if you want to support the Patreon channel. I've got Tim Torch over there. We do a weekly show, a lot of bonus content you guys do here. That's patreon.com/UTH.
Okay, thanks a lot. And then we'll just finish up then with some of our business here. Again, I am at Dynasty FF Addict. Russ is at Dynasty Outhouse, as we all know. Make sure you're giving us a follow. Follow the pod at Trade Addicts Pod and the DAP Network at DAP_network. FFPodShirts.StoreEnvy.com have a bunch of shirts for all different podcasts, all the DAP Network podcasts, Timeline, Dynasty Junkies, Trade Addicts, Dynasty Vipers, FF Intervention, a whole bunch of other ones. I believe the Superflex Super Show's in there. Russ has this charity that we're doing for the next couple months, that all the proceeds will go to, which is No Kid Hungry. And, the other thing I wanted to say is, just like I said, subscribe, rate, review, DAP Network, Trade Addicts Pod. So I think that is pretty much it. I always seem to forget something on here at the end, when, Russ is not here. So I hope I caught everything. Subscribe to the Patreon. You know, Chad mentioned that for himself. So subscribe to the Patreon, sign up for the Patreon. You get in the Cool Kids Club. You get to see, Russ cursing before the show, and all kinds of other stuff. And I think, that will do it. And, Chad needs to give his shot before we finish off here. So let's see what he does. He missed.
Front rimmed it.
I think you're probably right. It's under 40%. So in general,
0% tonight.
So I think that'll do it. Thanks for coming on. Good night, Chad.